You're listening to The Point. We are talking with Beth Murphy, director, producer, and founder of Principal Pictures, whose documentary film The List focuses on the efforts of American Kirk Johnson, who's been fighting to save Iraqis whose lives are in danger because they worked for the U.S. government to help rebuild Iraq. And Kirk Johnson, author, To Be a Friend is Fatal, The Fight to Save the Iraqis America Left Behind. Let's talk about some of the Iraqis you worked with and whose stories you write about in the book, and we also see some in the film. Number one on the list, Yagdan. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yagdan's a great guy. He was one of the most highly ranked Iraqis in the USAID mission. But, you know, to give a little bit of his story, he's a couple years older than me, so he was, he's now 35, I think. But, you know, he was running a computer repair shop in the early 2000s, and at the time that of the invasion. In the kind of chaos that enveloped Baghdad shortly after the city fell, his shop was robbed at gunpoint. He was shot through the leg, and he spent about 6 months lying on his back, recovering from his injuries. And over that period of time, Iraq was, you know, that's sort of the golden window that we often talk about, that there was this period of time where Iraq really was kind of lost. And so once he was good enough to walk again, he decided that he wanted to try to contribute to fixing and confronting some of the problems that he was seeing. And so he walked to the Green Zone and signed up to work for USAID. And for several years, he helped us implement a massive education program where we were rebuilding schools, we were training teachers, we were, you know, giving school supplies to the Iraqi kids, every kind of thing in basic and higher education. And we completely depended on him for this. And Yagdan and I became pretty good friends while I was there, but he's really the reason why the List Project exists, why all of this started, because it was the U.S. government's treatment of him after he received his death threat that really kind of woke me up to what was happening and it kind of summoned me to act.
Hmm. Yeah, and we do see Yagdan's story in the film, Beth. You follow his route. One of the things that's really, I think, incredibly frustrating here and also so hard to understand is these are people, interpreters. You're describing Yagdan's job. These are people who were vetted, screened and vetted to work for our government. And then the government turns around and says, well, we can't help you because you might be a terrorist.
That is at the heart of the outrage. In the last 10, 12 years since 9/11, I think that we have kind of lost our compass and our ability to make even these basic distinctions that an Iraqi who is risking their lives to sneak past militants in order to bring you your food, you the American, to bring you your food or to bring you tips on where they heard there might be a cache of weapons or an IED factory, those Iraqis are completely part of the mission until they get a death threat and they're on the run, at which point I've seen it happen again and again. It's almost overnight they turn from being people upon whom we rely to being potential terrorists. You know, for years I tried to kind of resist coming to a simple conclusion like, you know, this must be a whole host of factors. But I think in the end this cuts to kind of the more unpleasant id of of our government psyche, which is that these are, to be very honest, these are brown people. They are Muslims. They are Iraqis, and we're not much more thinking or thoughtful than that. And so that's what allows the State Department and Homeland Security to say that it takes years and years and years for us to give a visa to somebody who has been literally interpreting for our Marines and whose retina and fingerprints we have on record, who have already gone through background checks. I mean, it takes some powerful self-delusion to make that case, that this is the best we can do for these people.
Hmm. Beth, when you were filming, one of the things, you know, I think there was also some pretty outrageous behavior happening just in the way they, I can't remember which person this was, the guy who used to go out to get the yogurt. He'd go from the Green Zone to the Red Zone, put his life on the line because the person he was getting the yogurt from, she didn't like the yogurt that was in the Green Zone.
She was overweight and wanted low-fat yogurt.
That seems outrageous.
Mm-hmm. And he thought so at the time, too, and yet was charged with doing it. This was the task given to him. And amongst other things, he was also, he was getting all sorts of supplies for the base. And, you know, that was a really important job because, as Kirk said, people weren't leaving the green zone. And so, anything that they needed from, computers, pencils, paper, printers, it had to be gotten, just things to get through the day. So, but because they were, out and about, they were asked to get these really silly, petty things. And, any situation in which they had to say, I'm here buying something for the Americans, that's putting their life on the line.
Yeah. So you spent 4 years putting this film together, right? In several countries. It was Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, and, of course, across the United States. 350 hours of film?
Yeah, 350 hours worth of footage.
I mean, there's so many stories. We can't possibly cover all the stories that are in the book or even in the film in the time that we have today. How did you ever narrow that down? Because I'm sure that you wanted to include a lot more than you were able to.
Well, it really always, came back to Kirk's story and the story of the List, project, and Kirk's interaction with the people on the List. And so the more closely that we could follow the stories of people that Kirk knew and had known in Iraq. That was something more to be able to build the film around. And then we also, there were so many people and continue to be so many people in danger, really wanted to be able to include kind of a chorus of Iraqi voices. And so when we traveled in 2009 to Baghdad with Kirk and with Chris Nugent, one of the lawyers working on cases of the List Project, that's when we met with, a larger group of Iraqis and got to hear more stories. And, in the course of the filming, though, so many of the Iraqis that we met, being able to include their interviews in the film came with the caveat that you can only use this interview if I've safely been resettled out of the country. And for many people, that never happened. And, I think I would just... what Kirk did with the List Project to bring lawyers into the mix was truly, truly life-changing for the Iraqis. And it was something that had never been done before, to give access to legal counsel to refugees going through an immigration process. And what's incredible to see now, recently in the Defense Authorization Act, there was this real victory, I would say. It's hard to claim, many victories in this, and we'll see how it all plays out. But in the Defense Authorization Act that, went through before the Christmas recess, one of the things that it says now about the SIV program is that the people who apply are able to have access to legal counsel at the interviews. And I mean, I think this, I think Kirk and the List Project deserve enormous kudos and a great deal of debt of gratitude for what they've accomplished.
And Kirk, you write about that in the book. I mean, here you are, you're desperately trying to get someone to take over this list, some kind of refugee organization. You've talked to everybody, and all of a sudden this light bulb goes on when it occurs to you, hey, a law firm, this might be just what we need. But interesting response when you called the State Department to let them know, you were told, Kirk, this is over the top. Refugees don't need lawyers.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, it's still ridiculous. It's as ridiculous sounding today as it was years ago when they first said it. I don't think any reasonable person could look at the process, to look at the amount of steps that we ask refugees to go through, the amount of sort of trapdoors and pitfalls, and conclude that they don't need lawyers. I mean, this is a process that in many cases seems designed to reject them and then doesn't give them any rationale as to why they were rejected. And so I think, the other element to that, too, though, is when people are running for their lives, trying to figure out whether or not they can sneak into Syria or into Jordan, and how are they going to, keep their children fed. It's a little bit tricky to expect them to make sense of the bureaucracy within the State Department and Homeland Security and what happens after this step or that step. And so that was one of the things that, you know, I think the List Project and its firms, and there have, I mean, been hundreds of heroic attorneys that have helped us over the years. I think in some ways they acted as guides or shepherds in a way to help make sense of a very confusing process for thousands of these Iraqis.
The title of your book, To Be a Friend is Fatal, The Fight to Save the Iraqis America Left Behind, sounds a little similar to what Henry Kissinger said once: to be an enemy to the U.S. is a problem, but to be a friend is sometimes fatal.
Yeah, that actually, it comes directly from that quote. And I, you know, I had never heard that statement of Kissinger's until one of my Iraqi friends quoted Kissinger and told me that quote. And he told me it in the context of a memory of his from the earlier days of working with USAID, where Al Jazeera had been running footage of the Saigon rooftop evacuation at the fall of Saigon in April 75. And the message was clear that they were, you know, I think a lot of the Iraqis working for the Americans took that as a demoralizing, or were somewhat demoralized by seeing this footage. And there was this kind of lurking question, are they going to do that to us too in this war? Mm-hmm. And so I learned about the Kissinger quote from an Iraqi, but I think it, in some ways, I wanted to call the book that, because this is not a new problem. This is not the first time that we've been through this dance, and it's not going to be the last time. I mean, we have a very long history where we've abandoned people, but in other instances, we've done very well and protected them. Mm-hmm. And so I tried in the book to situate this issue within a broader sweep of American history.
You left the Green Zone and you went to Fallujah. Tell us about your job there. What was your job there?
So I was USAID's first coordinator for the reconstruction of that city. And, you know, I thought Fallujah was going to be, you know, an unforgettable legacy of the Iraq War. But I just went through book tour, and I spoke on a lot of campuses and a lot of young people. I mean, a high school freshman was, you know, 1 year old when we invaded, and so they don't know what Fallujah was. But just to kind of remind people, I mean, Fallujah was the center of the war and of the insurgency for some time. And so in our when the United States recaptured the city in November and December of 04, about a third of the city was reduced to rubble, and basically it became the sort of the psychological battlefront that we were gonna win Fallujah, because if we lost Fallujah, we were gonna lose the entire war. And so, you know, we had checkpoints all throughout the city where we scanned the eyeballs of Fallujah residents, and we were trying to kind of, the Marines were trying to kind of beat it back into shape. I was sent there with about $25 million worth of aid to try to look for ways to rebuild the city. But my time was cut short there. It has always kind of gnawed at me, because it was just when I was starting to really get my feet wet that I took what was supposed to just be a week-long vacation. But I never went back to Fallujah because of this accident that I had.
And we're going to talk about that accident. Kirk Johnson, we're talking with Kirk Johnson. He's the author of To Be a Friend is Fatal, The Fight to Save the Iraqis America Left Behind, and Beth Murphy, director, producer, and founder at Principal Pictures, whose documentary film The List is focused on Kirk's work. We'll talk more after a quick break.